More after this.
Mom, why didn't you show Mrs. Wood the ring Daddy gave you for your anniversary?
Because all she'd look at would be the brown spots on the back of my hand and guess my age.
Oh, Mother, if you're that sensitive, get some Porcelana.
Some what?
Porcelana. It's a medicated cream that helps fade age spots. It sure worked for Bob's mother.
Really? Porcelana works on age spots, brown spots, and freckled spots. Just rub it in. Watch spots start to fade. Porcelana medicated fade cream actually works to lighten brown patches and spots that come not only with age, but during childbearing years, too. Porcelana is available at cosmetic counters everywhere.
Porcelana, you say? I'll get some. It'll help bring back the natural tone of your skin in just 6 weeks.
Porcelana. Just rub it in. Watch spots start to fade. Porcelana medicated cream. Use only as directed.
South Korea's one-time political middleman, Tong Soon Park, testified today that he delivered thousands in cash to former Congressman Otto Passman of Louisiana. Passman's on trial on bribery charges in Monroe, Louisiana, where Eric Engberg reports.
His third day on the stand, Park testified that the sale of American rice to Korea under foreign aid programs required what he termed imagination and all kinds of maneuvers. Park said that he, as middleman, and Passman, who heavily influenced foreign aid appropriations, came to be what he called a great team on rice dealings. He testified that Passman would put in good words for him with Korean officials, helping to ensure that Park kept his position as rice broker, a job that brought him $8 million in commissions. In return, Park testified, he delivered $200,000 to Passman in cash as campaign contributions. The former congressman has denied receiving any money. Security around Park was tightened today as a result of telephone threats reported to officials. And at the end of the day, prosecutors turned the witness over to the defense, who will begin cross-examining tomorrow. Eric Engberg, CBS News, Monroe, Louisiana.
The chairman of a presidential commission on community neighborhoods has indicted federal urban programs for, in his words, having bypassed or bisected neighborhoods and thus encouraged the flight of large numbers of people to the suburbs. Joseph Timmeldy, a state senator from Massachusetts, heads a 20-member commission on neighborhoods appointed by the White House. That commission issued a report today terming government urban policy on neighborhoods a reign of errors. Timmeldy's report said federal, state, and local governments don't even have a working definition of what a neighborhood is.
I think it was basically poor planning. There is no sensitivity in government towards neighborhoods. In government, the big is beautiful. Where the neighborhoods survive on the smallness and uniqueness of being a neighborhood.
Among Timmeldy's specific indictments, urban renewal as presently carried out and investment tax credits, which favor demolition and new construction over rehabilitation of existing buildings. Industry sources say major oil companies have been warned Nigeria intends to raise the price of its crude oil by 17% on April 1st. Such a boost would be almost twice as large as most of those already announced by OPEC nations in the aftermath of the Iranian upheaval. Nigeria supplies about 6% of the oil used daily by the United States. Nigeria is America's second biggest foreign supplier after Saudi Arabia. Now this.
Sinus flares up.
I'm clogged up. Headaches. My whole face hurts. Help.
Set for sign-off.
Sign-off helps relieve your pain, helps clear congestion, ease sinus pressure and post-nasal drip. Sign-off does it all.
Send for sign-off.
And for the fastest known form of congestion relief, sign-off spray, S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sign-off.
The sinus medicines in the bright red box.
Here.
For occasional use, only as directed.
A Mammoth 2 plus 2.5 energy-saving refrigerators were designed from the ground up to keep your electric bills down. A Mammoth packs up to 2 inches of foam wall insulation around the refrigerator and up to 2.5 inches around the freezer where it's needed most, compared to about 1¾ inches used in typical refrigerators. A Mammoth 2 plus 2.5 gives you loads of convenience features, too. Even textured steel doors that add the warm look of leather and help hide fingerprints. A Mammoth 2 plus 2.5, the energy-saving refrigerators you can buy today and afford to operate tomorrow.
CBS News learns that the committee to re-elect President Carter and Vice President Mondale is to formally file as an entity with the Federal Election Commission tomorrow. The committee's formation was expected. It will be authorized by President Carter to start raising funds and to carry out preparatory campaign activities on his behalf without his active involvement. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
Fly Delta, you're flying an airline run by professionals. Some 32,000 professionals with just one job. That job is to make sure you have a happy trip. From the time you pick up the phone for reservations till the time you pick up your bag. All along the line, the Delta professionals go that extra mile for you because they hope the next time you fly, you'll fly Delta again.
Let the Delta professionals take you from Boston to Atlanta. You can choose from 4 nonstops and 9 through jets every day. You can fly Delta nonstop to Washington, too, or straight through to Birmingham, New Orleans, and Houston. Delta is ready when you are. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Is memory. Can you turn on that mental computer and select or program what you wish to recall? Or does the mind have, as it were, a mind of its own? If it can withhold events you wish to forget, can it make you remember events that never happened? Must all my yesterdays be a plague, said Edgar Allan Poe, forever to haunt me? Would that the past were a dream to be shaken off with the morning.
Now, you walked right into me. Why don't you look where you're going?
Terribly sorry. I wish I could. Did I hurt you?
No. You knocked the breath out of me. Don't tell me you didn't see me.
Well, I'm afraid it's true. I'm blind.
Oh, my turn to apologize. You always walk like this at night. No white stick, nothing.
White stick? I hope I won't always be blind.
Mystery drama End of a Memory, adapted from a story by Frederick Fergus, was dramatized especially for the Mystery Theater by Gerald Keane and stars Tony Roberts.
It is sponsored in part by Sinoff, the sinus medicines, and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Even a handy man can use a helping hand. So True Value Hardware Stores offer a handy guide for the kind of values do-it-yourselfers need around the home. Hi, Pat Summerall to tell you that in their Hardware Week circular, you'll find values like the Rocco 35-drawer storage cabinet for just $11.95. This sturdy enamel steel chest has 30 uniform see-through drawers, plus 5 larger sizes for storing and organizing workshop parts, craft and hobby parts, and even sewing notions. True Value Hardware Stores also offer the protection your hands need with a pair of Wells Lamont leather cotton gloves for just $1.88. They feature a split cowside palm and thumb, plus a 100% cotton back for long wear. See these and other values in the Hardware Week circular and get them at participating True Value Hardware Stores and Home Centers.
It's more than just a name. It's a way of doing
This is John Ritter. Did you know that 1 out of every 5 people has a hidden medical condition ranging from allergies to penicillin and other medication to heart problems, diabetes, and epilepsy, just to name a few? If you have a hidden medical condition, you should join the Medic Alert system of emergency medical identification and wear the Medic Alert emblem on your wrist or as a necklace. This could prove to be a lifesaver in an emergency. On the back of the emblem is an identification number plus a phone number which can be called Collect 24 hours a day from anywhere in the world to provide your computerized medical data to qualified personnel within seconds. A wallet card is also provided to members annually. Remember, a Medic Alert emblem will speak for you in an emergency if you can. Starting April 1st, it's Medic Alert Week across the country. Support the volunteers in your community or write Medic Alert Turlock, California, 95380. That's Medical Alert, Turlock, California, 95380.
Everything to live for, did Gilbert Vaughn. A sizable income, good education, and many interests. True, his mother and father had died in the epidemic that had taken the lives of many in England, but that happened when he was 14. He was now 25. Yes, for all his money and all his friends, Gilbert was single and he was lonely.
It was my fault, of course, that I had no purpose in life. The mistake I made was to feel sorry for myself. I had no idea what troubles could be, nor the slightest inkling that my life could suddenly take a turn for the worse. Until that morning when my eyes started to fail. In broad daylight, darkness closed in. Everything went from blurred to dim to quite black. It all happened so quickly, I barely had time to get to my doctor's office.
And you had no warning of any kind, Gilbert? I mean, last night, for instance, when you went to bed, no pains in your head, nothing?
No, I tell you, no. What's the point of going over the past, Dr. Baker? It's the present I'm concerned with.
I think it would be better for you if you adopted a healthy attitude and say to yourself, I'm not the only person who's gone blind.
Blind? I'm blind. Why me? What have I done?
But if you ask me, it's going to be a great deal easier to cure you of blindness than self-pity.
I didn't ask you. All I want to know is, who is the best man to take charge and how soon can he start?
Well, now, there's only one man who I would dare send you to. Dr. Julian J.
All right, I'll have him then. Will you make the arrangements immediately? I can't stand not being able to see.
Do you have a friend who could be at your side, at least for the present?
Yeah, I suppose so. Oh, there's Kenyon Grant. He lives close by.
Oh, it might take quite a while.
How long? Weeks? Months? Years? Where is this Dr. J?
Well, unfortunately, Gilbert, he'll not be able to take on your case right now. Dr. J is quite ill. When he is released from hospital, which may be, if all goes well, in, say, another month, it'll take him at least another 4 weeks to fully recover.
Oh, 2 months? What am I going to do in the meantime?
Today, Gilbert, I'm not going to walk with you. I'm going to walk behind you.
What for? To see me trip on the pavement and fall down? What's the matter with you, Ken?
Gilbert, listen to me. You don't know when this Dr. J will be well enough to take on your case, and I don't know. So wouldn't it be sort of fun to outwit those darned eyes of yours and show them you can get along perfectly well without them? Let's take a walk, and I'll show you. All right. 63, 64, 65... We're exactly back in front of your front door. Turn right. Good. Up 4 steps. Fine. Now, open the door with your key. You can stand here and catch your breath, Gilbert. You made it. It's simple. Just count the steps from this house to the corner, count back, and there you are.
I do feel better for it, Ken. Not at the mercy of those darned eyes.
The same goes for the inside of your house. Count.
Ken, how can I thank you? Thanks are just words. I shall do as you say, with deeds. I've relied on you too much already. That night, I went to bed full of confidence. I could make my way anywhere in town if I put my mind to it. Unaccountably, I woke during the night. Couldn't get back to sleep. And thought, well, why not? Nobody will be about. I got dressed, went down to the street, turned right, and started counting. I don't know what I could have been thinking of.
Did I lose count? But on my way back...
Here now, what do you think you're doing? You walked right into me. Why don't you look where you're going?
I'm terribly sorry. I wish I could. Did I hurt you?
You knocked the breath out of me. Now, don't tell me you couldn't see me.
But I didn't, you see. I'm blind.
Oh, well, that beats all. Oh, my turn to apologize. You go out walking every night. No white stick, nothing.
White stick? I'm not planning on always being blind.
Where do you live?
On Walpole Street.
Oh, well, this is Henley.
This... How did I get here?
Well, I think I know your street. It's not far. I'll take you.
It's funny. I've been counting my steps, too.
Here you are now, Walpole Street. Now, which house is yours? I'll take you right there.
Oh, I can make it all right from the corner by myself.
Sure now.
Oh, yes. Is the railing on my left side or my right side?
On your right. Now, sure you don't want me to see you to your door?
Absolutely not. You see, I mustn't allow myself to become too dependent upon others. I just have to count 62 steps from this corner, and I'll be right in front of my house.
Well, as you wish. Good night, young man. And I hope your eyes get better soon.
62 steps later, I turned right, up 5 steps. Only 4. Must have counted wrong. Well, if it's the wrong house, my key won't fit. Ah, home safe at last. I started up the steps to my bedroom when I heard someone crying. I ran my hand along the balustrade. It felt different. The carpet under my feet was different. I was in the wrong house.
Who are you?
I'm terribly sorry. I thought I was in my own house.
Come in here.
Well, we seem to have a visitor.
What are you doing?
I was trying to explain to the other gentleman I'm in the wrong house. You'll just show me to the door. I'll be on my way.
I don't like it, Professor. I don't like it at all.
Believe me, gentlemen, neither do I. So if you'll just show me...
Unfortunate, but we have no choice. We had better dispose of him.
What is that? Is that a gun you got?
Don't you recognize a pistol when you see it?
That's just it. I can't see it. I'm blind.
Blind, is it?
Honestly, totally blind. That's why I mistook this house.
Well, then, let us have a little test. Blind man, walk now forward 4 big steps. March!
Oh, I fell across something here on the floor. What is that? A body? It's wet. It's sticky. Is this blood? Help me. Get up, somebody. I've twisted my ankle. Help me up.
What do you think, my friend? Is he lying, or can he really see nothing in this room?
I think he's telling the truth.
Don't you understand? I can't get up. Is someone going to help me?
Don't excite yourself, young fellow. We will take care of you.
He did. He took care of me with something heavy and hard, and I blacked out. What seemed like an eternity later, I woke up. I was in my own bed. Standing there watching was Dr. Baker and Kenyon.
Well, how do you feel, Gilbert?
I don't know. Is it my head that's hurting, or my foot, or both? Ken, why aren't you up in the North Country?
Well, I was, until I got word from Dr. Baker here you'd had an accident.
Let me try to remember.
The police found you this morning lying on the docks down by the river.
Yes, of course. They must have taken me there. The last thing I remember, tripping over a body. It was bleeding. Then they must have knocked me out.
That's just what you said before.
Said before? When?
You've been a little delirious, Gilbert, and you were talking about getting into the wrong house. A woman crying, two men.
Yes. One man did most of the talking. There was a body all wet with blood. And I tripped over it. I fell on it.
Yes, of course, a body.
Didn't you find some blood on me?
No, not a drop.
How could that be? My hands were on the chest that was bleeding.
When you were found, Gilbert, the sleeves of your jacket had been cut away and the entire front of your shirt torn off. You were all grime and mud, but bloodstains? No.
Yes, but that's it. That's the proof, can't you see? Why would anyone do that to my clothes if there wasn't anything to hide?
Possibly, but then again, you might have been in some kind of a fight.
The woman. I wonder what happened to her. All the time I was there, I was sure I heard a woman's voice. Sobbing.
Oh, yes. Gilbert, I want you to drink this. It'll make you sleep.
You don't know how I wish I'd had the use of my eyes. Then I could have seen everything. The two men, the body.
Yes, Gilbert, I'd say you don't know how fortunate you were. If all this really happened to you and you had been able to see it, it's quite possible right now that you'd be dead.
Do you detect a note of disbelief in Dr. Baker's voice? He doesn't appear to quite believe Gilbert's story of the body, the two men, and the woman. What a fragile thing truth can be if it is shaken by doubt. However, it is rare indeed that Mystery Theater brings you a hero who cannot ultimately prove his word. Besides, you and I heard the strange goings-on with our own ears.
I like pickles, but they don't like me.
And your stomach sometimes, Joe.
I like pizza, but it doesn't like me.
And your stomach sometimes, Joe.
Digel's special combination of antacid and anti-gas ingredients gives you fast, gentle relief from acid indigestion, heartburn, and gas in just minutes.
I like hot dogs, but they don't like me.
And your stomach sometimes, Joe.
For occasional use, only as directed.
Introduce yourself to a remarkable nasal spray that lasts and lasts up to 12 continuous hours. Duration. Duration nasal spray relieves up to 12 continuous hours. Duration relieves nasal stuffiness and sinus congestion. So just one use lets you work all day. Just one use lets you sleep all night. Duration relieves 12 continuous hours. And that's Duration, with the longest lasting nasal decongestant. Use only as directed when needed.
The big one's got a contract out on you and me and everybody. The big one kills more than half the people who die each year. My name is Hart, Sam Hart, and I've been after the big one for years. The victims are typically wealthy, young, attractive, white, female or male, elder, black, middle class, not so pretty, hard-working, fashionably bored, corporate magnates, high school dropouts, no criminal record. Just plain folks, eccentric writers, housewives, free thinkers, rock stars.
Everybody. The big one hits everybody. We're talking about heart and blood vessel disease. More people die from heart and blood vessel disease each year than from all other causes combined. The American Heart Association thinks it well worth your while to learn the risk factors of heart disease and avoid them. We're fighting for your life.
Forgotten, I advise, this would be an account of the perverseness of memory. It will be. Don't worry. Remembrance of the past has been a theme for writers, poets, and painters alike. Who hasn't seen and been intrigued by Salvador Dali's extraordinary painting of the soft watch, of time bent out of shape, of what Dali calls the persistence of memory?
The mystery of the body and the sobbing woman was not solved. Kenyon Grant told me a house-to-house police search on Walpole Street turned up nothing. Dr. Julian Jay performed the operation. My eyes were as good as new, and he sent me to a warm climate to recuperate. Kenyon and I decided on Turin, Italy. Kenyon, where are we?
On the Via di Po.
What, again?
I don't think being able to see gives you any better sense of direction.
Well, then why don't you lead the way? We'll never get to know Turin if we keep walking around in a circle.
That's darn uncanny. Always we end up right back at the Church of San Giovanni.
Anyway, we've kept to our promise not to go inside picture galleries, monuments, shrines, churches, or any of the other tourist traps.
You might just have to break that vow.
Never.
What if I told you I have just seen the most incredibly beautiful girl go into the Church of San Giovanni?
I'd say, what are we waiting for? The girl was quite a beauty. But her most mesmerizing quality was a strange and faraway look in her eyes. Kenyon and I stood silently and stared as she knelt and prayed, and then was joined by an elderly lady. Together they left the church. We followed and stood on the steps watching as they slowly walked across the square.
Tell me, senor, do all English gentlemen stare at young ladies they don't know?
Now, wait a minute.
Senor, an Englishman travels through your fair land to see and praise all that is beautiful. If we've done wrong, will the senor convey our regrets to the lady? Your wife, sir? Or should I say, your daughter?
She is neither.
Ah, then, a friend. Let me congratulate you, senor, and also congratulate you on your proficiency in our language.
I have spent many years in England.
Many years? Well, I should not have thought so, since the senor has not picked up a particular trait of the English.
And what might that be?
To mind your own business.
Englishmen. I have never trusted them.
What an extraordinary fellow.
Very arrogant, wasn't he? Hey, look, Ken, there she is. Walking back now with the old lady.
Well, there goes some crusty old gent over to them. He's tipping his hat. See? By the fountain?
I guess everyone knows everyone else in a small Italian city.
Well, drama is not over. There goes our friend, Mr. Nosy Parker, to join the group.
Oh, so he did know the girl after all.
Kenyon, I have got to meet her.
Well, I wish you luck. No matter how many times I went back to the Church of San Giovanni, I never saw that girl again. My heart ached, but she and her elderly companion passed out of my life. Kenyon went back to Scotland, where he and his mother had a shooting lodge, and I returned to London. Then, call it coincidence, I prefer to call it fate. One day I was strolling down Regent Street, and there she was, that girl. She was alone. I followed her to Hobart Gardens, to a very respectable-looking boarding house. Determined to meet her, I took rooms in the same house. And every day sat in the park opposite, watching. One morning she came out alone, and without thinking, walked across the road, right into the path of a carriage.
Look out! Driver, rein in your horses!
I was at the girl's side in an instant, scooped her up and carried her back to the park and sat her down on the bench.
That was close.
Yes, it was. Allow me to introduce myself. Gilbert Vaughan.
How do you do?
What is your name?
Pauline Mott.
I have taken rooms in the same house across the way where you live, Miss March.
I was just going to the chemist's to get a prescription for Teresa.
Oh, yes, Teresa. Is that your companion?
A servant. She's ill.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that. Nothing serious, I hope?
Well, I think I've lost the paper with the prescription on it. It was from our Italian doctor. I could write to the professor for another prescription.
I'm afraid you've quite lost me. Who is the professor?
Yes, sir. I could do that. I think he may still be in Turin.
Is he? You've not been long in England, Miss March?
Sometimes. Some months.
I saw you in the spring. In a church in Turin. Turin? Italy?
You saw me.
At San Giovanni. You were there with your old servant, Teresa, I suppose. One morning?
Yes. We often went there.
You're English? Your name is not Italian.
Yes. I am English.
Your home is London? You're not going back to Italy?
I don't know. I can't tell.
It will depend upon the professor.
Oh, yes. The one in Turin.
Teresa said he's arriving here in a few days. Thank you, sir. It was pleasant talking to you. I shall walk with you tomorrow in the park.
Like that. Out of the blue. The next 4 days, we spent the afternoons together, walking and talking. Her chaperone was ill. Did Pauline like me? Care for me at all? It was all quite maddening, this girl. So beautiful and yet so exasperatingly vague.
You are the young man who saved my niece's life, yes?
Oh, it was nothing. I just happened to be there at the right time.
Do you wish a reward? Is that why you asked me into your room?
Well, I never quite thought of it that way, but I do wish a reward of sorts. About Miss March, can you tell me where are her father and mother?
They are dead. I am her guardian. And why are you so interested, young man?
My name is Gilbert Vaughan, sir. I will be frank with you. I love Pauline March, and I will marry her.
She is not to be married.
Professor, not knowing your name, I feel I'm talking to a wall.
Oh, my regrets. An oversight. I am Manuel Cineri.
Professor Cineri, I realize there is something strange about Pauline. Perhaps something in her life, something past. Who can tell? But that does not deflect me from the one desire I have, and that is to marry her. I am a gentleman, a fine family, and rich.
Mr. Vaughan, I like your directness. I shall be direct with you. You say you are well off. Would you be able to satisfy me with some proof?
Happy to. If you will excuse me, I'll go to my desk and write a few lines to my attorneys, asking them to give you the fullest details.
Fine. Shall we meet tomorrow at 10 o'clock?
Is the fact that you are here in the park to meet me an encouraging sign, Professor Cineri?
I've been thinking to myself what I had seen you somewhere before, Mr. Vaughan.
Yes, you have. I was in Turin last spring, and you may have seen me standing in front of the Church of San Giovanni.
Ah, yes, quite possibly. Mr. Vaughan, I have many reasons for wishing my niece to remain single. But your proposal has induced me to reconsider. The man who marries Pauline March must take her as she is. He must ask no questions, seek to know nothing of her birth, her family, nothing of her early days. He must be content only with the fact that she is a lady, that she is very beautiful, and that he loves her. Is that enough for you?
More than enough. Were Pauline my wife, I should ask for nothing more.
Good. You may be pleased to learn my niece is not entirely indifferent to you. Would it be possible for you, my dear Vaughan, to agree to an early marriage?
Would it be possible?
In fact, an immediate marriage. Say, the day after tomorrow.
But I don't know if she loves me. Would she consent?
Pauline is obedient and will do as I wish.
It was a mad thing to do. My only excuse was that I was so desperately in love and so convinced that after we were married, I could make her love me, that I didn't insist on some kind of a courtship. Nor did I ask myself why her guardian seemed so anxious to marry her off. It was only after the ceremony, we were in the train on our way to Scotland for our honeymoon, that I was alone with her. Well, here we are. Mr. and Mrs. Gilbert Vaughan. Are you pleased, Pauline? Pauline? Do you hear me? I said, are you pleased?
Yes.
Oh, my darling wife. If I could only make you feel as I do.
Yes.
Will you say, just once, Gilbert my husband.
Gilbert, my husband.
I won't pretend to you that marriages are usually arranged this way. This is just as new for me, also.
Yes.
Darling, when we went walking in the park, you remember? You talked so much more than this.
I didn't know what to say. I love being with you. Gilbert, my husband. Professor Tenari said it was best for me, so I accept that.
He said to me, the man who married you must be content to take you as you are and not try to know anything of your past. I agreed to that.
I have no past. Everything is a today.
I suppose that's a blessing, darling. That way you can't remember ever having been hurt.
I was hurt, Gilbert. Yes, I was hurt. But what happened? It's all gone now.
Well, I can't tell you how happy it makes me to hear you say my name.
Gilbert, it's a nice name.
When you say it, my darling. What a strange way for a man and a woman to begin their honeymoon. But since it means you sitting here beside me, I wouldn't change it for the world. Peculiar situation, to say the least. A young man married a girl who is, in fact, only half a girl. Her past is shrouded in mystery. Is it at all possible for them to build a lifetime only in the present? Why not, one could argue? Why are our yesterdays so essential to our todays? The answer may be startling when I return with it shortly in Act 3.
Good morning.
Good company.
Maxwell House. Coffee you can count on. Always smells good. Always tastes good. Always good to the last drop.
Maxwell House. Good coffee.
Good
to the last drop. Maxwell House.
I had it when I woke up this morning. Sinus, my worst ever. Until I took Sinoff.
Sinoff gives you all the pain relief of aspirin, plus relief from sinus pressure, congestion, even postnasal drip. And for the fastest known form of congestion relief, Sinoff Spray, S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sinoff.
The sinus medicines in the bright red box. For occasional use, only as directed.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau. When you shop, remember that there's more than just the price of the product to consider. There's also the reputation of the seller. And if you have a question about reliability, check with your local Better Business Bureau. It's also good practice to check the warranty, what it does and doesn't cover. It's also a good idea to find out if you have to pay for shipping if the merchandise must be returned. And check to see what other charges, if any, you're going to have to pay. Another way to be a careful shopper is to know something about the policies of the store or the seller. Consumers should find out what the return policy is. Does the store give cash refunds? Does it provide credit on future purchases? Does it allow returns only on certain products and not on others? Look, you better get all the facts before you buy. This has been a consumer tip from your Better Business Bureau.
Begin Act 3 with a dilemma wrapped in an enigma. Who is Pauline March, now the young Mrs. Vaughan? The honeymoon to Scotland was hardly that. A young man married to someone with memory missing, the power of reasoning absent, the feeling of emotions quite beyond her grasp. Why could she live only from day to day? I had to know. I could no longer remain married in name only to this beautiful creature, not only cut off from the past, but apathetic in the present. Kenyon Grant and his mother were returning to London. I prevailed upon the good Mrs. Grant to take care of my Pauline while I played detective. I returned to Turin, Italy, to the very spot in the square of San Giovanni where I had first seen Pauline.
Welcome again to Torino, Englishman.
Signor, yes, I remember. I'm very glad to see you.
You have come to Italy to stare at more of our ladies?
No, I'm here to find Professor Cineri. And I know you can help me. Where may I find him?
Cineri. I'm not familiar with that name.
But I've seen you in his company.
I know no man of that name. Good day, signor.
Wait, please don't go. I beg you to help me, signor. It's vitally important. There's no use denying you don't know him.
Oh, what makes you so positive, Englishman?
Because I have seen you walking arm in arm with the professor, talking to him right here by the fountain in this square. So I know you know him. Help me, signor. It's not for myself. It's for his niece, Pauline.
What do you have to do with his niece?
Everything, signor. She is my wife. The tall, thin Italian seemed thunderstruck. I heard him mutter, "Traditore, traitor." Then he turned back to me, his face composed. I should wait in my room at the Hotel Excelsior, he said. He would send Professor Cineri to me.
Professor, please come in.
I was surprised to learn you're here. How is your wife?
Why didn't you make me aware of Pauline's peculiar mental state?
Oh, come now. You had seen her a number of times. I'm sure she is no different today than when she first proved so attractive to you. In fact, I'm counting on marriage to help her regain... how can I say it?
Her past?
I believe that little by little her memory may be built up again. Or it may return as suddenly as it left her.
So, Pauline has not always been like this.
Some years ago, she received a great shock. A sudden loss. The result, her past was blotted out. Events disappeared. Friends became strangers. She was, as you better, born again.
What was the shock that did this to her?
That is one of the questions I cannot answer.
Yes, but I'm her husband. I have a right to know.
You have a right to ask. And I have a right to refuse.
Can you answer me this question? Who is the gentleman who arranged this meeting?
Well, that I can tell you. His name is Macari.
What does he do? His profession?
He is a financier.
Signor Macari was greatly disturbed to learn that Pauline is my wife. Why so?
He knew her years ago and wanted to marry her himself. She refused him. More than that, my dear Vaughan, you would not wish to know.
I returned to London. Time passed. Sometimes I thought Pauline was better. Other times, no improvement at all. Dr. Baker came, sent specialists. They all said the same thing. She might recover if she could relive the exact circumstances which caused this block. It seemed hopeless until that morning when I received a visitor.
Signor Vaughan?
Signor Macari.
Ah, you know my name.
As you know mine, the professor has told us. What brings you to London?
How is Pauline?
Improving, I hope. Little by little.
You may find it better to have a wife who cannot remember her past. And might I see her?
You give me an idea. You knew Pauline years ago?
Yes, Signor, I did.
Well, it occurs to me that if she were to see you, Signor...
It is one of the reasons I am here.
Stay where you are. I shall fetch her. Will you look at this gentleman closely?
Yes. I am.
Pauline? Do you remember me?
No.
Let me take you by the hand.
No.
Pauline, it is a long time since we last met. But you cannot have forgotten.
Try and think who it is, my darling.
Non mi ricordo.
She does not remember.
But she spoke in Italian. I have never heard her speak Italian. Signor Macari, I believe she is remembering.
Ah, do you think so?
Signor, how long will you remain in London?
Several weeks. I have a business here.
Would you please pay us another visit? Several visits. As many as you care to. I believe that your presence might be the key to my wife's recovery. Signor Macari had not been gone 5 minutes when Pauline took me by the hand in a fierce grip and pulled me out the door. Her face was fixed, immovable, her eyes wide. Something in her disordered brain was compelling her to go somewhere as quickly as possible. My hand in hers, we ran this way, that way. She seemed uncertain of the street. Finally, we came to a house not unlike mine, up the steps, four of them. And then she tried the front door.
Open door. It is locked.
Pauline, darling, I don't have the key. It's a deserted house.
Open door. I must go in.
Yes, but it's locked, Pauline. We can't go in there.
Open. Hurry.
All I have is the key to our house. All right, I'll try. Sometimes, who knows? Once before unlocked the door, thinking it was my own. A feeling of horror ran through me. This was no coincidence. I followed Pauline up the dust-laden stairs and into a room. Yes. Yes, it was. I could sense immediately it was the very room into which I had come 2 years before. Blind. Pauline ran to a room beyond. I ran after her.
We shouldn't have come, Anthony. And why so late at night? I only did as you asked because it was your birthday. But promise me you'll stay here with me until they go. I wish they wouldn't be so angry.
Pauline, what are you trying to tell me?
I don't trust them, Anthony. Especially him. Please, for my sake. Please, Anthony, don't go in there. Oh, don't.
Darling, darling, calm yourself. There's no Anthony here.
They're in there. Anthony is in there with them. What can I do? Anthony! Anthony, look out! He's got a knife!
I had my arms around her, trying to comfort her. Suddenly, I became one with her nightmare. The room beyond, which had been empty and dark, was suddenly filled with light. I saw a young man sit down with his back to me. Facing him was the professor, and next to him, standing, Macari. I saw a knife flash through the air. The young man started to get up, fell back, and then tumbled to the floor. I saw myself, standing in the doorway, my hands groping, eyes unseeing.
Who are you?
I'm terribly sorry. I thought I was in my own house.
Gilbert, I've given your wife a sedative. I'm glad you called me. What happened?
Dr. Baker, if I were to tell you what Pauline and I have been through, you wouldn't believe it.
Whatever it was, I tell you right now, I've noticed quite a change in her. She seems much more at peace. It just may be that tonight was a turning point.
The next morning, Signor Macari appeared.
Good day, Mr. Vaughn. I am back just as you requested. I do so wish to help you.
Why did you murder a man 2 years ago in a house not many steps from here?
Are you mad, Mr. Vaughn?
On the 20th of August, you stabbed to the heart a young man. The witness to your murder was Professor Cenari.
It was you, the blind young man. You! Why did I let him talk me out of finishing you off?
You don't even deny it.
That man, I want to tell you his name, was Pauline's lover. Hers is a noble family. The only punishment for such betrayal is death. Yes, I say it again, Mr. Vaughn. He was your wife, Pauline's lover. He had no wish to marry her, and so Chenery and I killed him, even in her presence.
I don't believe you. Please leave this house immediately.
As you wish. But think, Englishman, for what other reason would I willingly admit to you such an act?
Willingly or not, you have admitted to murder, a fact in which the police would be very interested.
And where would you tell them to look for the body? What proof do you have that all this happened?
You forget. I was there.
Were you indeed? Did you see all this with your own eyes? Who would believe the word of a witness who was blind?
Who indeed could believe what I had seen in a nightmare vision? Only Pauline.
And Dr. Baker absolutely forbade me to question her anymore. I was a man caught up in a never-ending hallucination. Then one day, an unexpected visit.
I could no longer stay away, Mr. Vaughn. I may risk my life here, but so be it. How is Pauline?
Professor Chenery, at the moment, she's in limbo. She's somewhere between the past and the present. I believe some of her past has returned, but instead she's lost the memory of her marriage to me.
What brought this about?
A visit from a man you know. Macari. Professor, had Pauline ever a lover who dishonored the family name?
Who has told you such lies?
Who was the young man murdered by Macari in a house not far from here?
What is all this? Who? Where did you hear such a story?
A story? You were there, Professor. And so was I.
It was you. And now I recognize you. But could you see?
Nothing. But I heard everything. Professor, you are an accessory to a murder.
I couldn't stop him. Killing was not my idea. I loved that boy.
I want the truth. Who was he?
He was Pauline's brother. My sister's child. He was Anthony March. Anthony and Pauline were the two children of my sister, who was Italian, and her husband, an Englishman. Anthony turned out no good. His mother and father knew it, and before they died, they entrusted into my care their money for the children. Anthony knew this and borrowed against what was coming to him, spent that, and then he borrowed all the funds Pauline was to inherit. He threw that away on gambling. Horses, bad friends.
Who did he borrow from?
Macari. The day Anthony came of age, Macari demanded the thousands of pounds he had loaned the boy. I gave him Anthony's inheritance, and no more. I would not give him Pauline's share. This infuriated Macari to the extent that he killed poor Anthony. I was to be the next victim, but you came in. And even without being able to see, you saved my life.
Where is Anthony's body now?
I ransomed it with Pauline's money. And it is buried in the family vault behind the church of San Giovanni.
Gilbert? Gilbert, where are you?
Go ahead, my boy. Take care of her. Tell her her uncle was here. And that I sent my love.
Pieces of the puzzle had finally all come together, as had my dear wife's memories and mind. I shall always bless the blindness that brought me into her life, and strive for the day her eyes are wide open to my love.
What happened to Signor Macari? He was caught. But most important, what of Gilbert Vaughn and Pauline? A trick of fate, you might call it. A young man who once was self-centered, selfish, and spoiled, now had to devote himself to healing and courting the girl he was married to. I'll tell you more when I return shortly.
What if you went off to college and found that you were different from everyone else, and everything was designed for them, not for you? Suppose you went to the library and all the books you needed were in Braille, and you were the only one who couldn't read. You'd feel left out, wouldn't you? And what if you went to class and found that there were no chairs because all the other students rolled in with their own wheelchairs? Suppose one of your professors gave his lectures talking with his hands, only his hands, and everyone understood sign language except you. You'd think it wasn't fair. Well, that's how handicapped people feel now when they go to college and find extra handicaps. But things are changing, and we have free information that can help. Write Closer Look, Box 1492, Washington, D.C., 20013. A public service message on behalf of the United States Office of Education.
Shakespeare sonnet, it says, "When to the sessions of sweet silent thought I summon up remembrance of things past, I sigh the lack of many a thing I sought. However, I am glad to report to you that no sighs, nothing past, no question marks will assail these young people embarking on a life together." Our cast included Tony Roberts, Carol Tytel, John Lithgow, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Miss Little, may I ask you a favor?
What?
I've walked this route a long time, known you folks a lot of years, ever since Jill was a baby.
I know that, Andy.
It's just that, well, I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't be down here anymore by your mailbox when I come along. It just ruins my day to have to give you the same news.
But we haven't heard a word from Jill in 6 months.
I'm sure that as soon as the State Department finds out anything, they'll let you know.
They don't care. They're not interested.
You don't know that. After all, where was it she disappeared? In South America someplace, wasn't it?
The Andes Mountains. In Ecuador.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty isolated terrain, isn't it? Even worse than the backwoods in New Hampshire here. And wild, too.
Oh, I'm sure if the government had really wanted to, they could have found her by now.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Sign-Off, the sinus medicine. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.